Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome in to another exciting edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, a conversation with Providence City Council Deputy Chief of Staff Billy Kepner, the Providence City Archives Shana Weintraub, and Providence City Councilor Rachel Miller. Hope everyone's having a spectacular day. On this episode, we're going to focus in on an initiative of the City Council and the City Archives, which is calling on the Providence community to participate in an online LGBTQIA+ Pride exhibit. Of course, June is Pride Month, and like most events here in Rhode Island, has been forced to migrate to the digital space due to the COVID-19 crisis. I'll read you the press release here on exactly what's going on. The Providence City Council and the Providence City Archives have teamed up to create an online exhibit in celebration of Pride Month this June. The exhibit will share the history of LGBTQIA+ rights in Providence, as well as highlighting the stories of today's community and their allies in the city. From community leaders to local organizations and businesses to out LGBTQIA+ residents and their allies, the goal of the exhibit is to share the diverse and wide-ranging stories that have enriched our community for so many years. So this panel discussion focusing in on how this exhibit was created and how you out there in the community statewide or wherever you may be listening can get involved and participate. So we'll get to that in a matter of moments. But before we do so, wow, what a weekend here in Rhode Island. And I'm sure many of you were out there, whether it was Friday in Providence at what I believe was the largest protest in Rhode Island history. Of course, Saturday in both Bristol and Newport with large turnouts for Black Lives Matter rallies there. And even on Sunday, North Kingstown, East Greenwich, Westerly, really a statewide movement to stand up for, let's face it, what's right. And I know many of you were actually following along during my Facebook live streams, and if you missed that, you can find those in the Bartholomew Town Podcast Facebook group, footage from the State House, from Kennedy Plaza, and even one particular moment in which the protesters made their way to the Providence Public Safety Complex for really a 30-minute demonstration in front of riot gear-clad police officers, a powerful moment in what was an absolutely incredible and powerful day and weekend down in Newport on Saturday. I've also got footage there also in the Facebook group of what was really, in terms of any sort of protest or rally, I think probably the largest turnout that I can picture going through the history books or whatever in Newport history. So that's the real Rhode Island, folks. I think that's the whole point I was trying to reiterate throughout the day with my commentary as I was live streaming was, you know, don't let anybody fool you. Don't let any talk show hosts fool you. Don't let any naysayers out there, far right groups and their messaging. I mean, let's face it, it's an apolitical issue. No matter where you stand on the specifics, the minutiae of government operations and so on and so forth, right? There's right and there's wrong. And particularly on Friday, the youth-led movement in Providence was really one of the most impressive things that I've ever seen in this state, maybe even the most impressive, to be honest with you. And I know a lot of you felt that way as well. Now, the key is, of course, that this is just the beginning. There's a lot of reform that's going to take place. I mean, actually, tomorrow there's going to be in the Finance Committee of the City of Providence a proposition to what they're calling defund the police. And I really think that's more about reappropriation of funds, reappropriation of strategy than anything. It'll be interesting to monitor this process as it moves along. My gut is, and I'm sure most of you feel this way as well, that believe me, this past weekend of action, you know, and even going back to the previous Saturday, the rally that began at Kennedy Plaza and made its way to the State House, and by the way, not including last Monday night's riots, which had nothing to do with the broad movement here, by and large. Now, I guess the FBI is investigating that. We'll see who was actually behind the riots in downtown Providence a little over a week ago. But folks, I think this is just the beginning of a major push for social change. And it's going to be really, really fascinating to see where this goes. And look, I'm sure the pedal is going to stay down in one way or another, specifically when it comes to social justice and equity. This is something that has been played out in plain view during the COVID-19 crisis, right? That's why a couple of months ago, I started demanding zip codes and more specific data about ethnicity and, you know, who is being most impacted by the COVID-19 crisis, right? There's no question health equity played a major role in the outcomes that we saw and are seeing when it comes to generally health, but specifically COVID-19. So look, there's going to be a lot of social change. 2020, one year, right? Holy Moses. Hard to imagine, you know, you think back to January, it's hard to imagine that anybody could have predicted that we would be in such a rapid fire period of development. And look, there are people who are suffering through some of the major negativity points of this year. But let's hope that collectively we come out in really a better place than when we started, top to bottom. And that's something that I've heard from progressive listeners. I've heard from Republican listeners. There's nobody out there who can disagree with that unless you're really a total maniac, right? Or a naysayer. You know, it's as plain as it gets. So that's that. And, you know, again, if you missed it, you can head over to the Bartholomew Town Podcast Facebook group or my YouTube page. If you missed the Providence or Newport rallies, that is, and you can watch the live streams and see some of the powerful moments that took place throughout the days there. And it sometimes really left me speechless. At other times, you know, it was just a perfect moment to offer some commentary on where we're at in society. And I appreciate all of you also who were there and commenting along, and that dialogue that we were able to have throughout the day on Friday and throughout the day on Saturday. That was powerful. Top to bottom, an incredible experience. And I'm just so happy for the kids that organized the youth rally on Friday. 10,000 plus folks turned out in downtown Providence, going through the history books, anecdotal evidence, conversations with folks. That's the largest protest in terms of numbers, in terms of media coverage, anything like that in Rhode Island history. And as a state, it's a moment where we should have a lot of pride. All right, let's get to today's episode. Speaking of pride, celebrating Pride Month digitally with Rachel Miller, Providence City Councilor, Billy Kepner, the Deputy Chief of Staff for the Providence City Council, and a B-Town veteran, Shayna Weintraub of the Providence City Archives.
I'm Shayna Weintraub. I work at the Providence City Archives as the Reference and Multimedia Administrator. I manage the social media accounts, and I'm also working with Billy and Councilman Miller on the LGBT history exhibit coming up.
I'm Rachel Miller. I'm the city councilor for Ward 13, which is Federal Hill in the West End in Providence.
And I'm Billy Kepner. I'm the deputy chief of staff for the Providence City Council with a focus on communications. And I work a lot with the archives on exhibits throughout the year. I'm very excited to be here to talk about this because I think it's more relevant today than ever.
Absolutely. And so within the context of, first of all, Pride, you know, that's not breaking news by any stretch, but the cancellation of events, it's an extra important time to elevate many voices in many different communities around the state right now. Let's get into why you're here today, Billy, if you could sort of set that up specifically, you know, what you just mentioned in the intro.
Sure, absolutely. So earlier this year, Shayna and I met to talk about what we might do for Pride to go hand in hand with the city celebration. And we had the idea of doing a 51 portrait exhibit of Rhode Islanders through the years, and also having the AIDS panel on display. And one of the things that really was a surprise to me is that everyone I asked who were millennials in my office had no idea what the AIDS panel was, and had no idea what the AIDS quote was. I think if you ask them who Larry Kramer was before yesterday, they probably didn't know. or 2 days ago. As a gay man of a certain age in his 40s, I happen to have been a child during the AIDS epidemic, but I understood it really broadly. And that's why I really wanted to tell this story, because I think COVID-19 has pushed us in many ways. I feel like I've been pushed back in the closet. I think I shared that with Counselor Miller one day in a conversation, that because of the spaces that we go to convene with others, are closed because, you know, we can't be with our chosen community, our chosen family. I feel like I'm isolated, even though I've got a husband and I've got a life and a work that keeps me very busy. But that's part of the reason why we thought this was really important, to be able to tell our different stories.
Shayna, if you want to jump in on that as well, sort of the origin and importance of storytelling in this moment here, where kind of everything has been kind of overshadowed by the dominant theme of the virus.
Yeah. So Belly and I spoke about this, and something that we could agree on was that nobody under the umbrella of LGBTQIA has the same experience. And it's a misunderstanding to look at anybody that is in the community and lump everybody together as having this whole, they spent their youth thinking, if maybe I'm gay, I'm going to come out. They have that story. They do this, they do that. It's different for literally everybody. And we want to be able to tell that through, we wanted to be able to tell that through the 51 different portraits. Unfortunately, we couldn't do that due to the circumstances, but we have pivoted to an online format where we're also getting people to submit their stories along with a couple photos and a 400-word story along with their name, their identity, their age, so on and so forth. And we think that it's a good alternative for right now during this time.
Counselor, if you could sort of highlight, you know, your role in the community and frankly, what that means to the community, the fact that you are on the city council here in Providence, and sort of just touch on that experience and the unique experience that you've had.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to say, like, Shayna and Billy have put so much work and effort into this exhibit. And I'm just, it's like a labor of love, and I'm so proud and excited to be a part of it. And I want to like thank them both and lift that up. I think there's something, as much as I was looking forward to the in-person plan to celebrate Pride this year, there's also something like profoundly powerful about collecting all of our stories, right? Like in all social movements, we have this way of lifting up like leaders or people we promote to leadership. But the reality is, like, we define and create our community by our own individual stories. And, you know, the way Shayna was talking about how everyone's experience in this huge umbrella that is LGBTQIA is different and unique and immensely powerful. There's a way that just creating the space for anyone who wants to come in and tell their story creates a connection between us, and creates this like this sense of solidarity and really fighting isolation and the many ways that folks are marginalized throughout our community. And so, you know, it's been a funny thing being like a first LGBTQIA city councilor, right? Just because, you know, how you wear that and what that means, I think changes from day to day. I think representation matters, of course. But I really think it's also about like action and solidarity and thoughtfulness with a broader community. And that's really how I look at it. I mean, I will say last year when we did our Pride resolution, I shared my own personal story around I'm actually trying to remember now, but around building a college recognized LGBTQ organization at Holy Cross, I believe. And also it was the 50th anniversary of Stonewall. Right. And so, you know, shared our experience that Pride has become a celebration, but it really, its origins is in our fight for equity in our community. And, you know, in that moment, that all of the counselors present, like, stood up and applauded. And it was a powerful moment for me too, just in telling my own story to my colleagues on council and figuring out how we move forward with full representation.
We are experiencing tremendous opportunity right now in the virus situation to examine a lot of the social inequity that has been prevalent for my entire life, going obviously well before that and before all of our lives. I mean, the timeline probably extends before there is a timeline, really. You know, there's no question about that, a timeline of history. One area right now is that isn't necessarily being highlighted is your broad community and communities. And in terms of, you know, we obviously know that there's significantly more of an impact in the elderly community, in the Latinx community, in the African-American community, and so on and so forth. But speaking from the perspective of a marginalized community, obviously, it's not necessarily a bad thing that we're not seeing spikes, you know, in the LGBTQAI plus communities with the virus. But how does that tie in? You know what I mean? Do you feel like it's an overlooked area now as we kind of move forward out of the virus and try to address some of these major challenges and injustices that we face here in this society we've built?
Yeah. So I think there's two things, right? In the same way that our community is this broad, diverse umbrella, we experience, you know, equity and privilege in very different ways. And so last month, and Billy, I'll ask you to speak about this, but last month, Billy helped us organize a roundtable on LGBTQ issues. And one of the things that came out strongly on that is the ways in which communities of color within the queer community and trans members of our community and youth, right, who we don't think about this, but LGBTQ youth are still more likely to be homeless, more likely to have health problems, right? There's still all of the discrimination and challenges for that community. Billy, could you talk more about that event?
Absolutely. It was, so the roundtable was incredible, and we had a really diverse, dynamic group of panelists from Justice Gaines. We had representation from PRISM. We had Brett Smiley from the state. We had Counselor Miller. I was on the panel because I planned it, so I got to be on the panel. We had Congressman Cicilline. We had Senator Sam Bell. And, you know, we had this conversation, and the counselor is absolutely correct. What really was brought to light is that during any health crisis, during any crisis, inequities always come to the forefront. And you can see that played out every day as of late. Inequities in the people of color, in the colored people of color communities. You see what's happening in Minnesota. It's just mind-boggling to me, you know. And I'm a gay white man of privilege, and I know that. So I do what I can, but I know my place, and I try to lift others up when I can, because that's the responsibility that I have because of my position. And I know that not everybody else has that. Everybody's story is completely different. I have friends that were abused, that were homeless, that did sex work. All of these things that people don't think about, that because they have no idea about the gay community or what we go through. If you look at the trans community, the number of trans men and women that have been killed every year, it's astounding. And you add on top of that trans people of color, trans people that are Latinx, it's exponential. And then bringing that together and having this disease on top of it, so you're dealing with people who are already marginalized. A lot of them have been pushed out of their families. Many of them are homeless. The only way they're able to eat is by doing sex work. And then you have this other disease on top of it. Not mentioning that HIV is still prevalent in the community, but now we have this other virus that, if they have any underlying condition, can kill them. It's really... It's very reminiscent of what happened with the AIDS pandemic, except our country didn't react as quickly because it only affected a small group of people. But because this was such a communal spread disease, our country reacted much differently. So I might be a little bitter about that subject.
Yeah, that's something that, in fact, someone, a friend of mine, a close friend of mine who lived through the AIDS crisis in the 80s, someone who's in their 60s now, when this all began, the virus, even before it necessarily impacted, not Rhode Island, the United States, I remember we were having dinner, and that was the comparison that he gave, was that this is, you know, now everyone's going to have a window into what we experienced firsthand. And then when you take a step back from that as well, and you go, we don't have a vaccine, we don't have a great understanding, there's a lot of stigma, and here we are 30-something years later, you get to wrap your head around that fact and then assess COVID from that perspective. You know what I mean? It hopefully it wakes people up to this experience, does wake people up to the experience of those who have lived through HIV AIDS and continue to have to battle on that front essentially here in modern times.
And I think there's a lot to learn too from movements like ACT UP and other HIV and AIDS organizations who led that fight then. Because we see just such a remarkable lack of leadership at the federal level on how COVID-19 is impacting communities across the country. We see huge disparities in impact in communities of color, both nationally and locally. And so there's a lot to learn and a lot to take action on in the coming months as we continue to move forward here.
Let's kind of wrap with just the specifics. If we could go, first of all, thank you all so much. This is great. And I hope we can do this, you know, kind of continue this conversation. This is a nice panel here. Shayna, can you kind of set up for the listeners how they can get involved, considering we're in social distancing mode? What sort of accessibility do listeners have right now to this?
They can go online through the Providence City Council and Providence City Archives social media pages. There is a link that followers can go to sign up to tell their story, and they can also share it. It's really important that we get it shared throughout the community right now. There is so many stories out there, and we can only reach so many people. So we are relying on people in the community, whether they are LGBTQIA+ or not, to share that so that we can take in those stories for the archives to have for generations to come. So when somebody in maybe 50 something years wants to come and see what it was like to be in the community during the early 2000s, 2010s, 2020s, or even before, that's going to be there. And that's what we're collecting right now.
Billy, any final comments here?
I think it's hugely important. I think that all of the stories are very different. I always tell the story that, you know, I had a great high school career. I was prom king. I was still called pansy and called names because, listen, if I stand perfectly still and don't speak, maybe you wouldn't guess that I was gay. Unlikely, but I'm a dead giveaway. But my experience is very different. I grew up in rural Pennsylvania, but I have friends whose experiences were like, they were abused at school. They were bullied all the time. That didn't happen to me. So for me, I have some residual guilt about that. I have residual guilt that I survived. I have residual, my husband is 60 years old. He has residual guilt that he survived and lost friends. And the other one last thing that I really would like to point out is that one of the things that is so important to me is that we have at least two generations of people that have no idea what we lost. They have no idea who Nureyev was. They have no idea who Halston is. They have no idea who Basquiat was, even though that was a drug overdose. But Keith Haring. These people, what they could have done with the rest of their lives, but taken out so early and so in the prime, we stand on the shoulders of giants. And the people that saved the gay community, straight women, lesbians, they were drag queens, they were the ones that went out and screamed and stood in front of police people to start the riots in Stonewall and to help us survive the AIDS pandemic.
And counselor,
sorry, I get very passionate.
That, no, you ought to.
Yeah, I would just say to folks, please go online, tell your story, find it at the City Council and Providence Archives website. And thank you, Bill, and really thank you, Shayna and Billy, for bringing us this project.
Yeah, you all deserve to be, all three of you, independently, from my perspective, as someone who monitors what's going on around here, and then as a unit here, extremely much so deserve to be elevated. Your voice is elevated, and you're genuinely significantly important community leaders. And I just thank you for your perspective and for the work that you do, because, you know, it's it is a depressing reality here, to be honest with you. You know, I've been, the more and more, not just because of COVID-19, but boy, does my head spin to every night. You know, it's hard to dig out of it. I'll be honest with you. It's like I'm having a hard time, and I appreciate you elevating these types of issues to the magnitude that you are. So
thank you, Bill. I think that's a shared experience.
Thank you.
To the extent that it helps, I think we're all having a hard time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm about to cry. So that was,
yeah. Being able to share our stories is one way to fight that. So thank you.
Yeah, it's really like the most effective way right now, given where we are.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Discover well over 200 episodes of the Bartholomew Town Podcast, which the Boston Globe described as the gold standard of Rhode Island podcasts, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or at ripodcast.com.